more main speaker from Los Angeles.
Hey, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Christy, and thanks, Trevor, for having me out tonight. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love my life. Thanks, Chip. Happy birthday, everybody. Happy congratulations to all the chip takers. I actually live in Calabasas, for whatever that's worth. I just drove all the way. As my friend from Ohio that came and drove through Old Town Calabasas, got to my house, and he said, "It's such a lovely city you live here, Calabasas." And I so all the way from Calabasas, I'm down here in wherever I am, Laguna Niguel, I think. Anyway, I love AA, and I never say no to AA request. That's not true. That's not true. That's not true. Yeah, they asked me to speak at this musicians meeting, and I'm like, sure, whatever. And then they said you have to sing your share. And I said, nope. I'm not gonna do that. And although happy birthday for 1 year, that's a really big deal. I have a sobriety date. It's February 19th of 1989. And that first year was like longer than the remaining 34. I'm 35 years. So that first year was the hardest for me. And it's a big deal, really big deal. And anyhow, yeah, I know. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. But at some point I'm going to go back though, because My dad only allowed us to listen to musicals when I was growing up, which is definitely why I'm alcoholic for sure. and I just saw The Sound of Music last night, actually. It was like, but there is a version of my story that's like, and then I got crabs. Like there's this sing-along, like Sound of Music version of my story that's like, I have to bring to that meeting, whatever, dude. I love AA. I if I put AA first, like if I keep AA first, family second, work third, if I keep my life in that order, everything works out. All the money shit, all the kids, all my kids, all that stuff just works out when I keep AA first. And the problem is I put work first all the time. And then I get anxious and insomnia and stressed out and worry about money and how am I going to, whatever. And then I put AA first again. I take a newcomer to a meeting or I do a written 10 step or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's just gone. It's just, this program is magic. I put the needle in the shoulder and my knee gets better. It's spiritual acupuncture. It's what we do in AA. I put the needle in the shoulder and my knee gets better. I got here and I'm like, hey, I've had some coffee today. I don't know if you can tell. I was just like, I got to AA and I couldn't pay my bills. I was fired from Aardvark's on Melrose. I was like, how am I going to get my girlfriend back? She just dumped me. And they said, pick up a mop and sweep and mop up the floor at the whatever group. That's what they told me. I'm like, how? In my head, I'm like, how is that going to get my job back? How is that going to pay my bills? How is that going to get my girlfriend back? How is sweeping the floor going to get that girl back? And I swept the floor anyway. I swept the floor at that meeting. I got a commitment. I was the cleanup guy at whatever group when I first got sober. And you know what happened is I got that job back at Aardvark's. Miracles happen in AA, people. I got that job back selling used clothes on Melrose. And I didn't get the girl back, you know. But God says, yes, not yet. I've got something better in store. Every time. Yes, not yet. I've got something better in store. I saw that girl at my high school reunion and I'm like, thank God I didn't get that girl. But thank God I didn't. I mean, not like, not judging, just observing the passage of time. Like, I am like, so, I mean, it's just, yes, not yet. I got something better in store. I've been with my wife for 27 years. We have two kids. And it's like, I got this son, he's 19. I've got a 16-year-old daughter who calls me bruh. It's like the fucking worst. And She's 16. She's getting her license tomorrow. It's like I'm like stoked that she's gonna have, you know, her freedom and whatever. And the other part of me is like, my baby girl is gonna be out there driving with all the people that belong in here, you know. Anyway, I just had lunch with my son, and you know, 2 months ago, 2 months ago, he's a really happy kid. And he applied for college. You know, he's 19, and he didn't get into the college. He didn't get into Chapman, which is down here in Orange County. And he was really bummed. And I've never seen my kid like bummed, like this bummed. And like you said, Chip, I share my problems in AA, they get cut in half. I share my joy and it doubles. That's my life experience with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I shared that at a meeting, and one of our friends, JJ, who is who's this guy, he's an ex-porn star, because you know we got everyone in AA. And not that I haven't seen him that much. Anyway, I know him from AA. Anyways, this ex-porn, I shared this thing and at a meeting, and he says, and he goes, comes up to me at the meeting, he goes, "Dude, I know a professor at Chapman." And I'm like, "No, you don't, dude. You don't know a professor. You're a porn star, dude." And turns out he did. And connected me with Joe Rosenberg, who's Joe R, a member of our program. And this guy is the sweetest guy I'd ever met. And you know, 2 weeks later, he wrote a letter to the admissions person, and my son got in college. You know, it's like only in AA does like the porn star connect you to the, you know what I mean, to the professor that gets my son. It's like only in AA does this happen. It's like I put the needle in the shoulder and my knee gets better every time. And it's like I forget. Like I said, I forget. I mean, everything in my life should have a property of Alcoholics Anonymous bumper sticker. Everything. Because without this, you know, without putting AA first, I'm not staying married. I'm not staying faithful. I haven't cheated on my wife in 20 since I've been with her. I haven't. And it's only because I'm in AA, and I learn from the men that have come before me of how to be married. You know, I keep going to meetings and my life gets better. I was in New York a couple years ago at the Mustard Seed, and I was just so tired. It was a 7 a.m. meeting, and I get to the Mustard Seed, and it's got the fluorescent lights, the bottom of this apartment complex, and I'm sitting down there, and everyone's like in round robin style, and half the guys are going to work in their suits, and the other half are homeless people. It's like a perfect blend of AA, right? I'm sitting there, and they're going around the room, round robin style, sharing, and I'm just thinking about, like, you know, I'm thinking about me. What am I going to share? What am I going to bring my LA energy to this New York meeting? Whatever, like, just thinking about me. And they get to the guy next to me, and he says his name, so and so. He's like, "I'm from the Bronx." He's a homeless guy, and he's got all of his everything he owns is in this plastic bag under his chair, right? Everything he owns, and I was just so judgy that I'm like, I'm thinking, what is this guy gonna share that I'm gonna, whatever, what's he gonna share? Like, let me go. And he shares, and he goes, AA is like McDonald's. And at the time, I was this devout vegan. I'm like, what do you mean AA is like McDonald's, dude? And he goes, NA, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, is like Burger King. He goes, Burger King is good, but it's never gonna be McDonald's. Thanks for letting me share. I'm like, that's the best share I've ever heard, ever, in an AA meeting, and I have no idea what to share after that. It's just like, you know, I keep going to meetings and my life gets better. It's just like, whatever God is, like, I was so broken when I got to Alcoholics. I was 21, I'm 57 now, and I was 21 when I got sober, and I had first stages of cirrhosis. I had my liver, I had extended liver, I had yellow jaundice eyes, I was extended belly, and I was dying everywhere. I was dying. I had DUI. I'd been in jail in Mexico, which is like so not rad. And I was dying. And so when they said, and I, you know, I came here a devout atheist. You know, I remember I was just talking with Chip about this. The You know, I was such an atheist. I'd be out there when I was out there drinking, living in San Diego, like the, I was gonna say the Jonas Brothers. What are they called? Jehovah's Witness. The Jonas Brothers did not come to my house. It was Jehovah's Witness came to my house, knocked on the door, and I let him in. And I was like, and I was just taking bong. I had this bong called the Mind Slayer, taking bong hits and just, you know, pounding beers and just wait, doing lines and just wasted. And these guys got up and left. Like, I can't. Anyway, I was a devout atheist when I got here. But they said, my sponsor, John Kimball, who's been my sponsor for 35 years, he said to me, get on your knees and say the third step prayer, which is on page 63 in the big book. Memorize that prayer, say it on your knees in the morning. I was willing to go to any length to do it. And I didn't think twice. I didn't think twice. I just said those words. And like I said, whatever God is shows up in AA meetings. And I don't have some, how could I? I'm one little piece of this huge puzzle in the universe, this ever-expanding universe that we live in, like this one little piece. And they said, try and stop a wave or make the doorknob your God, whatever works for you. I'm not here to judge it. They say the one thing that separated us from the Washingtonians, from the Oxford group, is a God of our own understanding. So one thing that separated us. Those programs were Christian programs. This one is God as you understand God. And my definition of God has certainly changed over 35 years, but I still get on my knees and say the third step prayer. I try and keep it simple. You know, I was at this meeting in Germany. I was just back from Germany last month, and it was like, again, I got there. You know, we got there, and it was this. You know, this big German, it was a German speaking meeting, which I didn't know. I don't speak German, but I got there and I was sitting there because I was just in an AA meeting. I'm like, I had made it. I'd arrived. I'm at the meeting, you know, in the middle of Leipzig, Germany. And they're going around the room sharing. And it was a 2-hour German speaking, no break, no timer meeting, right? Like the best. And so I'm sitting there like, whatever, just judging my way into like, what's up, bro? You know, and then they get to me, and I said, I'm John, I'm an alcoholic. And I just shared in English for like 2 minutes, whatever was going on that day. And then the guy next to me, he says his name, and he says, I'm an alcoholic in English. And he says, I want to take a vote to see if we can share the rest of the meeting in English for our American visitor, right? Only in AA does this happen, only in AA, right? And they took a vote and everyone voted, you know? Except this one German guy's like, nine. He was so pissed. He was like, no, we're not doing that, you know? Just like, and then they shared the worst English I've ever, the rest of the meeting. It was incredible. And it's like, whatever God is shows up here. And it's just like, I've never, and I've been to a meeting every day since I've been sober. I mean, I go to a meeting every day, except when I don't. And I go to a lot of meetings and it's like, I have never felt worse leaving a meeting, not one time, you know? And it's like, and I've been to some wild ass, I guess I'll share one more thing about meeting, just this meeting I went to in Colorado, actually. It was a men's meeting, and I go to a lot of men's meetings where I live. And so I got there and I couldn't find it. I was in a rental car and I got there late, and again, it was like the fluorescent lights, church basement. You know, half mold, half AA coffee, just like a perfect. It was just a great. I just got there and I'm like safe. I'm safe, you know, from whatever's going on in work and all that stuff. And I'm sitting there, and the first guy that I hear that the meeting had already started, he's sharing, and halfway through his share, the guy next to him stands up and he goes, "Who is your God? Who is your God?" And I'm like, "Whoa, dude!" And I asked the guy next to me, he goes, "This." AA, you know, and the guy said, "Yeah, it's a born again Christian crosstalk meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous." Duh. I'm like, "Awesome! I've never been to one of these, so let's go." I'm sitting there, and like halfway through everyone share, the speaker would stand up like Phil from Pantera. "Who is your God? Who is your God?" And I'm like, "Jesus!" And they're going around the room, and they get to me, and I'm like, you know, because I was so not at all bored. Not I was just like, that was the most exciting meeting I've ever been to, right? And they get to me, and I said, "I'm John. I'm an alcoholic visiting from Los Angeles." I said, right before I got sober, I came to at the border of of Mexico and America, and I was black, came out of a blackout, and I was making out with this Tijuana hooker that had a face like Edward James Olmos, which is just what happened. And they did not ask me who my God was. Bro, welcome, LA, LA. I don't know. First time I drank, I was going into high school. I was probably 13, and I grew up in the Bay Area. I was in Santa Cruz, and it was a Davenport Beach and bonfire on the beach, whole thing, Santa Ana's. It was just like, and I just got, I blacked out the first time I drank ever. And I was going into high school, and I came out of the blackout, and I was making out with this one girl that was a sophomore and one girl that was a junior. And it was like, just a moment of silence for my wife, who I love so much. I love my wife. I do love my wife. And it was the best night of my life. And I'm like, I never want to feel different than this. And they say fun with problems, then just problems is the progression of alcoholism. And it was so fun in the beginning, just robbing houses and stealing cars and smashing windows. And I was a punk rock kid. I had shaved my head and safety pin in my ear. And I was just running rampant in the mean streets of Saratoga up in the South Bay. Just destroying everything, destroying property. It was so fun. And I was in a band and it was so fun. And then I turned 16, I got kicked out of high school. And then towards the end of me being, like right before I turned 17, I got this girl pregnant and she was 21. And it was a one night stand. And it was a two night stand. I went back for more. I went back. I don't want to pretend like this is someone. It's like it happened. It was a two night stand, and it went back. And she had my first daughter, when I was just turned 17. And man, was I wasn't there when she was born. I just didn't care at all about anything. I didn't care about anything. And I was just doing drugs and drinking. That was my whole life. And I drank, and I got really sick right before I turned 18. And I went to the doctors. This is, you've got an ulcer. Your liver's 3 centimeters bigger than it should be. You've got first stages of cirrhosis. He said, if you continue drinking the way you're drinking, you'll be dead before you're 30. And I was 17, and I'm like, who would ever want to live to be 30, bro? Like, ever. And he suggested AA. All my mom's sisters are sober. So my mom took me to this AA meeting. And I'm there, and I judge everything about you by the kind of music you listen to. And everyone in the meeting has got, Led Zeppelin and Rush t-shirts and eighth grade mustaches. I'm like, this is not it. And I got my shaved head, and my leather jacket and combat boots in the middle of summer. And I'm just like, and they said, are there any newcomers? And my mom nudges me, and I said, I'm John, I'm probably alcoholic. And then she stood up and said, I'm Sue and I'm John's mom. And I'm like, I'm never coming back ever to AA, ever. This is so lame. And I did it for 9 months. I stayed dry, which was the greatest experiment of my life, because they say if your problems get worse when you stop drinking, it's a surefire sign of alcoholism. And my problem, if you're not treating it with 12 steps, and that's what happened. I wasn't treating my alcoholism with alcohol or the steps. And I was white knuckling it, punching holes in walls, cutting myself with razor blades, punching myself in the head. I hated who I was. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. And so after 9 months, like the book says, if I have a glass of milk with my shot of whiskey, it'll be different this time. And I said, if I have absolute vodka and imported beer, my liver will be just fine. And I started drinking, and I was living in San Diego. I blacked out in Mission Beach in my Dodge Dart. And I came to out of the blackout, and my engine's on fire, and I'm pissing all over it. And I'm like, how did I even get my car on the beach? It's like, and then I'm ending up in jail in Rosarito. And, things just got – I'm reading that No One Here Gets Out Alive Jim Morrison book at the time. And I'm thinking I'm this Jim Morrison character reincarnated, right? And I got everything I have on me. I bought in Tijuana. I've got my leather pants and my cowboy boots and my leather vest with no shirt on underneath. And I've got long hair. I look nothing like Jim Morrison. I look like a fat, bloated drunk like Bret Michaels is exactly what I look like. And I'm cruising around. I got this hippie girlfriend in Ocean Beach where I'm living in She never cut her hair, hair's down to her knees. She never shaved her legs. I used to brush her legs like a little kitten, you know. Her name was Kimba, right? Like the Lion King. Yeah. If you guys didn't drink like I did, I don't know. I drank, and I moved to LA, and Kimba left me for my drinking, and my car burned to the ground in Agoura Hills. And then I got, you know, I had that job at Aardvark's. I got fired from Aardvark's. My unemployment ran out, and I was in so much pain, and I would go on these 3-day benders, and I'd come to like, you know, five, six in the morning after drinking for 3 days straight, and I would just be in so much physical pain. I'd be at the LA Free Clinic, and just I couldn't. I got to that jumping off place that Bill talks about. You know, I couldn't imagine my life with alcohol. I couldn't imagine my life without alcohol, and I came up with a plan. And like Chip, I was gonna. My roommate had tickets to see The Cure at San Diego State. I was going to go see this goth band, get depressed enough to kill myself. That was my plan, real plan. So I stole my roommate's car, and I'm driving from LA to San Diego. And instead of making it to the concert, I get pulled over, and I got to, and it was my 3rd day drunk. I got just put to jail in the drunk tank instead of making it to the show. And you know, whatever my plans were, it never came to fruition. And I just the judge said, you can stay in jail, you can go to an AA meeting. And I said, I'll go to an AA meeting. And I went to the whatever group. And that's where they told me to pick up that broom and sweep the floor. And I've been sober ever since. It's like I didn't know that was my last drink. I just knew that I couldn't live that way any longer. God, I hated who I was. And it's like I got, you know, my sponsor said we're self-supporting through our own contributions. You're 21 years old. You can't take money from your parents. You can't collect unemployment. You've got to go get that job back at that used clothing store. I got that job. I got a better job at American Rag, and I got a better job on the Promenade in Santa Monica selling shoes, selling Doc Martens. And I was at this job, and I would go. So my life at the time, I was about, you know, 4 or 5 years sober, and at the time, it would consist of. I would go to my noon meeting, Mario's, on the promenade, and hear all these guys tell all these epic stories, and I just and I'd go to work at 2:30 to 11, and I practice in my little band Goldfinger, and then I'd go and I would go back to work and do the whole thing all over again. And I went to work one day, and this guy came in, and he's like, "Bro, I know you from your band. What are you doing here?" I'm like, "I'm selling shoes, dog." And I had a little a demo of my band, a little demo cassette. If you don't know what a cassette is, you can fuck off right now. A little cassette tape that I slipped my little demo cassette tape in his 9 and a half Oxblood Doc Martens, you know, he offered me a record deal a week later. That was in 1994, and I've been doing music ever since for a living. And it's like all I had to do was put AA first, family second, work third. That's all I've ever had to do is the next indicated action. Like our 9-year birthday said, the next indicated action is all I've ever had to do. What's right in front of me. That's it. We do this one day at a time. That's how we do AA, is one day at a time. That's all I've ever had to do, right? And because of that experience, like I've been able to go on, and I met my wife in New Jersey at the Stone Pony, and it's like I would have never guessed that this was how my life. Like I couldn't have planned it. Like Steve Jobs always used to say, you know, we can only connect our life from how we get here by looking, connecting the dots backwards. No one has a crystal ball. No one. I could only see that I've done this one day at a time by putting, you know, AA first. I met my wife in 96, and it's just like I don't know, my life is just, I love my life, and it got really difficult in the early 2000s. Like things just, we my son, well, I want to say that the first person on my 8-step list was my daughter, who I'd never met from being 16 and getting that girl pregnant. And my sponsor said, "This is what you're going to do. Every Christmas, you're going to visit her and bring her presents. On her birthday, you're going to go visit her in Santa Cruz and bring her presents." And that's what I did. And I remember the first time I ever met her, she was, God, she was 7 years old, and we went to the Went to the boardwalk in Santa Cruz, and man, I have never been as nervous as I was ever. And I was like, with this little girl on these roller coasters, and I'm going to the bathroom every 3 minutes saying the Serenity Prayer, saying, God, please help me stay here and be present. And that's what I did. We became friends, and then we became, we became really close, and we talk on the phone. And I was on tour this one time in Europe, and we played this show, Top of the Pops. And I found out that her favorite band was at the time was Hanson, which wouldn't have been my first choice, but whatever. And we end up playing this TV show with Hanson, and I go and knock on their door. Her favorite guy was Taylor, and Taylor answers the door, and he was the sweetest kid ever. And I said, "Hey, man, I have a daughter, and you're her favorite person on the planet. Is there any way you could call her?" And so we called her from at the time this big European cell phone, and he gets her answering machine because the time difference. She's at school. And left a message, hey, it's Taylor. I just met your dad and just want to say, I think you're awesome. And, thanks for being whatever. He's the sweetest kid. Her mom got home, got the message on the answering machine, called the school. The principal plays the message over the loudspeaker for the whole school, right? Plays this thing. She said she fell out of her stair, out of her chair, hysterically crying. She says, to this day, it's the best day of her life. She says, to this day, and she's had three kids. So it's like, when they say like a living amends, right? Like you have no idea when that opportunity is going to be to make that living amend. And it just presented itself. It wasn't planned. It just presented itself for me to be able to, whatever, do this for her, for Ashley. And it's like, and the crazy thing is, like, she was pregnant with her first daughter when my wife was pregnant with our son. And so, yeah, so my granddaughter is actually older than my son, which is just straight Jerry Springer, like straight Jerry Springer. And so in the early 2000s, what happened is, like I had built up this huge life, like I had all this stuff, like all everything that I don't even know if I knew this stuff existed, but it just all this stuff happened. Like I got a house and I've got a career and I working at this big record company and all this stuff happened. And then, this one week happened and they, my son was born. He was 9 months old and they told us he had kidney cancer, right? So we had to move in the UCLA cancer ward. And when my parents were coming to fly down, my dad died. It was all this stuff happened. And then like the same week, my job, like the guy's like, your boss got fired, you're out of a job. And I'm like, and I had all this mortgage and all this stuff. And I'm like, what, and Irwin Feinberg brought meetings to me in the UCLA cancer ward when we were sitting there with my son and they were wheeling him down to take out his kidney. We all said the third step prayer and I just asked God, I said, please just save my son. Just save my son. And crying hysterically. And what happened is the doctors were wrong. It was a cyst that was growing on his kidney and it wasn't cancerous. And my son's okay. He's had all these learning differences since then and a bunch of developmental delays. But all that happened and I couldn't get out of it. And somehow I just lost my way. I answered phones at central office. I got this long-term commitment. I got more sponsees, doubled up my meetings. I had to move from the west side of Los Angeles. Like we decided to move to the valley and sell our house. And I went to my, I don't know if you guys go to LA or whatever, but I went to my home group in Brentwood at the time. And I said, dude, we're moving over to Woodland Hills. He goes, that's the valley. That's where dreams go to die, is what he said to me. I'm like, thanks, bro. That's really helpful, And I remember going over to Mario's and I talked to John Robinson, who's like this great old guy. And he's just like, he'd always have this can of Alto. I was just thinking, because my son's pledging this fraternity and they make him carry a tin of Altoids. And it's like, this guy, John Robinson, would always have a tin of Altoids. It's just funny how AA is just a thread through everything. I talked to John Robinson. I said, hey man, things are pretty bleak. I don't know what I'm going to do for work. I don't know what's happening. I've lost. I don't know what to do. And he goes, it's always darkest right before it turns pitch black, is what he said to me. And I'm like, all right, bro. And then I talked to Milton, and it, you know, and Milton Dykus, who was just this, I mean, he taught me so much. And he said, you know, he would always say, life is short. Don't take yourself so serious and lighten the fuck up. And if that offends you, you really need to lighten the fuck up. He'd say this to me, and he would say this to the group. You know, he'd say, the only handicap is a bad attitude. This guy had Parkinson's, right? He'd shake in these meetings violently. It was a lunch meeting, Mario's. And he'd say, I'm a really nice guy. Just don't sit next to me while I'm eating soup. You know, he was so epic. This guy was so epic. And, you know, I remember driving one day. I just come to the end. I had, like I said, tripled down on AA. I'd never left AA. But I was so, this period, I was so dark. And I was driving up the 405 this one day. And I called my sponsor, John Kimball. And I said, hey, man, I'm waking up in the morning. And I'm just, I have these dark thoughts, like suicidal thoughts. And I have AT&T. I got to the top of the 405. I dropped the call, of course. And I call him right back. He goes, I thought you killed yourself. This dude, so all my guys are so classic. And I called my Al-Anon sponsor, and he said, this is what I want you to do. No matter how you feel, when you wake up in the morning, I want you to go outside in your backyard, raise your arms to the sky, and say, I love my life, as loud as you can. And I'm like, on the phone, this guy, like dude, I in my head, I'm like, I hate my life. B, like, it's not in the big book. C, like, it's never going to work. I'm not going to trick myself into believing something I don't believe. You know, and so I didn't, you know, for 4 weeks, my life got smaller and smaller and darker and darker. And I finally, one day, I'm like, I'm going to try this stupid thing that's never going to work. And I'm in my own backyard, and I'm facing the fence. And that same day, I'm interviewing this kid to possibly intern for me. And he's a 17-year-old kid. He showed up early. My wife let him in. And I'm like, I love my life. And I look over, and this kid's like, hey, I love my life too. What's up? He didn't get the job, you know, and it's like, but the thing is that was the first step of contrary action that I knew wasn't going to work, that got me just an inch out of that hole I was in. And I've been saying it every day ever since. I say, I love my life. I don't care if I'm homicidal, suicidal, or whatever. I just say it, no matter what. I just say it. And it's like, I'm not that, it turns out I'm just not that smart, because I do trick myself. There are days where I wake up and I'm miserable and I say this stupid thing. And it's like, and anyway, it's just like AA is always evolving for me. And I just keep going to meetings and my life gets better. I've got a mother-in-law, and no, I'm not going to tell that story. I do love my mother-in-law. No, let's do it. Let's fucking do it. She was visiting one time, and you know, it was my wife's, what was she? She was turning 40, and I was in the back seat with my friend going to eat dinner, and we're driving down the freeway. And I told my friend, I said, hey, my wife's another year older than my mother-in-law, who can't hear well. You know, I found out later, but what happened is she turned around. And that same morning, I had signed this big life insurance policy, right? So she turns around, she goes, now that you signed this life insurance policy, you're worth more dead than alive to Amy. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It turns out she thought I had said my wife was old because she can't hear that well. But I was like in the back seat, just like, what's happened? Like, and I was so angry, and I just sat there. They say, pause when agitated or doubtful, pause when agitated or doubtful. I paused the entire drive. Although in my head, we're going 80 down the 405. And I'm just like, I just imagining just reaching over, opening the door, and just give it a little tap out the door and watch her bounce. Anyway, I just sat there and I'm like, all right, whatever. Got to dinner, got home, paused. I paused the whole dinner. I paused when I got home. I called my sponsor. Told him what happened. He said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go buy a dozen roses. I want you to go to her door, and I want you to tell her how much your kids love it when she comes to visit, how much your wife loves it when she comes to visit, and you wish she would come and visit more. That's what he tells me to do. I got to tell you, the second I made the decision to do it, the second I made the decision, the resentment was gone. It was gone. This program is magic. I put the needle in the shoulder and my knee gets better. Every time I choose to do the work, right? I went to the store, I bought the flowers, I knock on the door, she opens the door, I go, Darla? I said, my kids love it when I said, my wife loves it when you come and visit. And I said all of it. I wish you would come and visit more. And she's reading a book and she puts the book down and she starts crying. And she looks at me and she goes, John, I never thought you liked me. And I don't know where she would have got that. I don't know where she would have got that from. No idea. But it's like, it's just like this program is just magic. And I was, you know, my, you know, I guess it's every year as a tribute to my father, we go see the Sound of Music at the Hollywood Bowl. And my son, they do a costume contest. And 5 years ago, he's like, I want to dress up. And we came up with this idea. And he's like, I want to be a female deer, like the song, Go a Deer, female deer. And so we got this deer onesie and I put one of my wife's bras on him. And we get to the stage and it's 18,000 people. And he gets up on stage and walks up there and the MC is like, oh, what's your name? I'm Julian. You know, how old are you? I'm 14. What are you? I'm a female deer. And everyone starts laughing and I'm filming him from the front of the stage. And she goes, that's such a lovely brassiere. It's pink bra that he's got on, right? Such a lovely brassiere you have on. Whose is it? He looks right at me. He goes, it's my dad's. You know? And it's like, they say don't leave before the miracle happens, right? Is what they say in AA. I don't know what that miracle is going to be or when it's going to happen, but don't leave before the miracle happens, right? Don't leave before the miracle happens. You know, I was working, God, 15 years ago now up in the Bay Area, and I'm sitting at the airport, and this guy sits down next to me. I'm waiting to get on a plane. I'm with my wife and my two little kids at the time, and he's got, you know, all these LA gang face tattoos, this gang member, and he starts talking to me, and he's like, hey, Holmes, my boarding card says B, yours says A. What does that mean? I said, well, A goes on the plane first, and B goes on the plane after A's loaded on the plane, And then I take out my phone. I start fake texting like you do in those awkward situations. Just like, bro. And my wife's looking at me and he's going, are those your kids? I'm like, yeah. And, you know, do they get along? And my wife's kind of like, should we move? Like looking at me. And I went to a meeting that morning to give a friend of mine a cake for a year that I went to school with up in Los Gatos. And I'd been to a meeting. So I had enough spirituality in my bank to just sit there and listen to this guy. And he's like, if they get a toy, how do they agree on who gets to play with it? And I'm answering him one word question or answers. And then he says, the next thing he says to me, I was in prison for 17 years. I got let out this morning and you're the first man I'm talking to. That's what he says to me. I put down my phone immediately and I said, well, you went there for drugs. And he said, yes. And I put out my hand because I'm responsible. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of aid to always be there for that. I am responsible. And I said, I'm John, I'm an alcoholic. And this man shakes my hand and then he starts crying. And he goes, I got sober 9 months ago in prison. And I'm flying home to see my two kids who I've never met. And he says, I don't know how to be a sober father. That's what he says to me, this man. And he's asking about my kids because he's trying to gather information. And I shared with him for the next 10 minutes about my experience, strength, and hope. And whatever God is, I just get goosebumps thinking about it. Just, whatever God is showed up in that moment and spoke through me. And I was there with this man, one alcoholic talking to another. And that's what it is. That's what it's all about, right? And you got on the plane and that was 15 years ago. And I was just thinking, you know, I don't know. 4 months ago, they asked me to speak at the Orange County Convention. And it was like, you know, at the end of the meeting, you know, it was probably 2,000 people. At the end of the meeting, everyone lined up to thank me because I'm fucking rad. And and they go through the whole line. It took like 45 minutes to just say, you know, say thank yous and whatever. And the last guy in the line was that guy from the airport. And he's like, and I shared that story and he says to me, I have been sober ever since. I haven't been back to prison and I've raised these two children for the last 15 years. And whatever God is, like, has my back. I just, all I got to do is just keep going to meetings, you know, course I work the steps and help others, but I just got to keep going to meetings. You know, I don't go in the dark to rescue these people anymore. I stand in the light so they can see me. Thanks. Thank you.